I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall television and radio show. I'm really excited. Love our new format. Love our new studio. Love how this is going. And I want to talk first off with a sort of review of what we did last week, because there are some things that we have, we talked about last week, some things that we taught last week that are coming up new again this week. And so let's look at this real quick. We have, remember last week we talked about the danger of vouchers in the school systems, federal vouchers specifically, and the cry for people to get out of the public school system because of the way federal mandates have screwed up the entire curriculum. And then understanding that it's the federal mandates brought on by federal funding then, and the requirement of the educational curriculum by the federal funding. Well, if we take that federal funding and now we give it to the parents, right, and say now you can choose through a voucher system, you can choose where your child goes to school. You have school choice now, right? We got those in those little proverbial parentheses, right? School choice now that you have federal funding. Why would we think that federal funding to the parent would involve less federal intrusion than federal funding to the school districts? Well, the answer is it wouldn't. It's absolutely illogical and ridiculous to assert that federal funding to the parent will not invoke federal control over the school that the parent chooses, or even the homeschooling, which is precisely why a majority of the homeschool groups like HSLDA and those homeschool legal groups are saying, no, we don't want to be a part of this funding, this federal funding and federal vouchers. So let me show you what came forward today, or let's see, yesterday actually, about this voucher program and the requirement of the federal government on this voucher program. I cannot believe. Do you know that I just pulled up this link and it gave me, oh, this is so crazy. I just got spammed by an ad, okay? So I have totally lost the, I can't get off of this thing. All right. So this is gonna take me just a second here to pull this back up again, but hold on. What agency receives federal funding and has zero regulations or stipulations? Let me ask you, can you think of one federal, of anybody who gets money from the federal government who doesn't have any regulations or stipulations? You're not going to find one. It just doesn't exist. Now, this is, how frustrating is this? Spam ads, man. Totally spam ads. So let me just go ahead and, while I'm now lost this, oh, here it is, let's see. So the title of this article is DeVos-style education mandate, clear Senate, educators urge House members to vote down SB 61. Now, this is what I want to read to you. This is what I want to read to you from this article. And it says, let's see. Now I'm going to have to find this again. Let's see. Okay, here we go. This is exactly what I was telling you about. This argument against vouchers means that the federal government will be mandating curriculum, mandating standards on the parents. And I want you to hear it not from me, but it from the people who are opposed to this regulation. It says Senate Bill 61 is the first step in bringing the DeVos-Trump agenda to Colorado. Through this legislation, charter schools can siphon resources away from districts without meeting the strict rules that have been set for traditional public schools. Now, remember here, we're setting up the argument that the people will be able to avoid the strict rules, as our proponent is saying here. So if you get the federal funding from in this voucher format, then these schools, the private schools, the charter schools, and even the homeschool groups will be able to avoid the strict standards. Listen to how it continues. It says, all schools receiving taxpayer money need to show they are upholding strong standards of transparency. But this bill only rewards for-profit charter interests while failing to hold their schools accountable to those strict standards. You see, I hope that you can see what I'm seeing here. They're saying if these vouchers go to the charter schools, if these vouchers go to the parents, they will be avoiding the strict standards. So what do we have to do? We have to make sure that the strict standards follow the vouchers. No funding without standards. And then the next thing you know, you don't have school choice anymore. Because how is school choice relevant when every single curriculum is mandated to be the same? Is it really school choice when your charter school has to accept the same curriculum that people are trying to run from? On these, from the public schools? Is there really school choice when your private schools are now running the same curriculum? Is it school choice when the homeschooling parents are now mandated this curriculum? No, it's an illusion of choice. It is not a choice. And that's why we need to see. We need to see how federal funding always creates more federal control. Don't fool yourself that just because the feds are cutting you a check or the charter school a check instead of the state or instead of the public school, that you're going to somehow be miraculously saved from all those federal tentacles that come into your life. It's not going to happen. Please, please, I want to ask you one more time. What agency, what state, what entity receives federal money and has zero regulatory action, zero stipulations, zero strings? Can you name one? No, you can't. And that's why we cannot have these vouchers. In last week's show, we also talked about the consequences of federal health care. The cascade of events that happens when we get federal health care. And the first of these cascade effects is something that I want to inform you about so that you can see I'm not crazy, okay? That I'm not just making this stuff. I'm not speaking in hyperbole. Surely the federal government's not going to increase their power just through federal health care. Remember, federal health care is not about health care. It is about the federal government subsidizing the health insurance companies. And we should know that's the big reason why the Republican House and the Republican Senate are not talking about full repeal of Obamacare. It's this whole reason why they don't want a full repeal. We want a repeal in a place, replace. It's not about your health. It's not about your health care. As a matter of fact, Paul Ryan on Face the Nation, March 12th, told us the whole purpose why they want to repeal and replace. It's not about improving your health care. Paul Ryan said that we have to repeal and replace because Obamacare is about to collapse, he said. It is about to collapse, and if we do not repeal and replace, then the health insurance companies will fail. You see, this repeal and replace is not about your health care. It's not about cancer patients. It's not about babies. It's about bailing out health insurance companies. And Paul Ryan said it right there on Face the Nation just the other day. This is all about money. It's all about federal power. And I want to show you a bill that is being put forward by four Republicans that will increase federal control over your lives. Increase federal control. And I want to show you this bill. This bill is called H.R. 1313. It is the Preserving Employee Wellness Programs Act. I love the title of these bills. They make you think you should feel all fuzzy and warm and happy inside with the Preserving Employee Wellness Programs Act. But let me tell you what this bill does. This bill gives massive incentives. Or let me put it this way. Allows insurance companies to offer massive incentives for people who will submit to genetic testing as a part of their insurance program. Genetic testing. I mean, these benefits are so big, it turns them into a penalty to people who refuse genetic testing. You see, this bill says that insurance companies can offer incentives up to 50% off of the entire insurance, what are those things called? Premium, that's right. The entire insurance premium can be 50% off. And when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about this a little bit more.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Television Show. You know that the full television show will be available on Liberty First University. Our first 30 minutes will be available on the Christian Television Network if you want to find out, and on YouTube. If you want to find out how to see it on the Christian Television Network or how to view it on YouTube, remember, go to chrisannhall.com. All of the directions will be there. You can watch it on DirecTV. You can watch it on Dish Network. Or you can watch it on YouTube at a later date in the future. Just the first 30 minutes. We have an amazing, amazing show today. We've been talking, recapping last week about vouchers and about the healthcare plan. The rest of the show, the full 2 hours, I want to get into some very important things that we're seeing in the news today and the constitutional historical implications of them. For example, we have a congressional hearing coming up, or at least a demand by a congressional committee for documents and testimony from the Department of Justice over the Trump Tower wiretapping thing. And there's also, I saw a couple videos of some congressmen giving town hall meetings. And there are some very important things that we need to learn from these two videos. And these are the things that we're going to cover today. And, you know, the interesting thing is everything that we're doing is always constitutional, but this is about federal intrusion. And even the videos about the congressman giving their town hall meetings has to do with state sovereignty, with the 10th Amendment, and the people not knowing how the Constitution is supposed to work. So I want to talk to you now about this bill that we left off with in the last episode or the last segment, H.R. 1313, the Preserving Employee Wellness Programs Act. And again, this act, it has not been passed yet, but if passed, authorizes health insurance agencies to offer huge incentives for people who will give genetic testing, who will submit to genetic testing. These incentives are so big that they actually equate to a penalty to people who refuse. I mean, we're not talking about $5 or $6 here. We're talking about 50% off the entire premium, just if you agree to submit to genetic testing. We have four, this is not a Democrat, liberal, progressive, big government bill. This is a bill that comes from four Republicans. I will give you their names. They are Mark Wahlberg from Michigan. You guys remember Mark Wahlberg, right? If you've been watching or have been following the Chris Ann Hall Show for a while, Mark Wahlberg is the representative from Michigan who came to one of my classes, the class that I teach on state sovereignty. And in that class, he disagreed with something that I had said about congressional responsibility for the budget. Now, I tried to explain to him, you remember the YouTube video, where I tried to explain to him that he was not disagreeing with me. He was disagreeing with James Madison. But in this discussion that he and I were having, if you can really call that, because he never really let me speak that much, Tim Wahlberg, the representative, you hear Tim Wahlberg say that the only limit to congressional power is whatever they can get a majority vote to pass. He said the Constitution is a goal of perfection that we cannot achieve. It is not what binds Congress. The only thing that binds Congress is what they can pass under a majority vote. So it should not surprise you that Tim Wahlberg wants to have genetic testing, which is more federal power into your lives. So we have the sponsor is Virginia Fox from North Carolina, Tim Wahlberg from Michigan, Elise Stefanik from New York, and Paul Mitchell, another one from Michigan. Michigan, you've got to get these guys under control. Remember, the cascade effect of the Affordable Care Act is that it allows you, the federal government, into every aspect of your life.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back after the break. Now we have this cascade effect of the Affordable Care Act. Remember, the compelling governmental interest, which allows the federal government, or at least it makes them think that they have the authority to be involved in anything in which they can prove to the court that they have a compelling governmental interest. And so with a compelling governmental interest in your health care, in the cost of your healthcare. They have a compelling governmental interest in your healthcare. They have a compelling governmental interest in anything that impacts the cost of your healthcare. And guess what impacts the cost of your healthcare? Your genetics. Yes. And that's what H.R. 1313 is now going to establish, a compelling governmental interest in your genetic makeup. My goodness, we know that the NSA, the FBI, the Department of Justice are building a huge database of our telephone conversations, our emails, our computer keystrokes, where we drive, taking pictures of us as we go down the street. Now they're going to be building a database of our genetic makeup. And they'll tell you, oh, it's not a mandate. We're not mandating genetic testing. We're giving you a choice. Really? No, you're mandating federal health care. That's what you're doing. You're disguising the mandate of federal health care by choice. And then you're disguising a mandate of genetic testing by choice, because we've all seen these rates of our premiums go through the roof with federal health care. That will not stop just because now we have Obamacare Lite, just because we have a Republican plan instead of a Democrat plan, right? We now have genetic testing that will be incentivized. Oh, but genetic testing was in the Obamacare original. Well, now we're going to upgrade the Obamacare original with Obamacare Lite and have everybody get into genetic testing so they can save thousands of dollars. Oh, but don't worry, they say. We won't use that genetic information against you. And anybody who uses that genetic information against you, we will punish them. How do you think that's going to work out? When was the last time any corporation was actually punished by the federal government? When was the last time a pharmaceutical company was punished by the federal government? A major one, anyway. Let me ask you this. When was the last time an executive agency was punished by the federal government? I'll remind you that several years back, the EPA was called on the carpet by Congress. And the EPA admitted to not only lying to Congress, they admitted to taking money from Congress for research that was never performed, and they admitted to making up data so it looked like they performed the research that they didn't perform so they could get the money. The EPA is on congressional record admitting to this. Can someone please tell me what Congress did to the EPA? What did Congress do to the IRS when they admitted that they had been targeting conservative groups with their audits? What has Congress done to HHS when they were called on the carpet? What has Congress done in the Benghazi hearings? Nothing. Nothing at all. Their promises are empty because there are no consequences for them breaking their promises. And that's the very sad thing, that they have no accountability. And so now we have Congress incentivizing genetic testing to the point where it's a penalty for those who refuse. You refuse genetic testing and you will pay thousands of dollars more for your premium than somebody who gives in and gets genetic testing. And now, what did we say? The cascade effect is in place. My goodness, can I just admit to you that I never anticipated such a deep reach into our lives this quickly? I mean, I expected, you know, that they would say we're going to mandate certain foods be sold in the stores and you can't buy this thing and you can't have too many Cokes and that sort of thing, right? I never anticipated that they would jump right into your DNA. How much more intrusive can they become? Oh, but don't worry. It's for your good. You can trust us. Come on now. Something's got to give. Why don't we call Virginia Fox in North Carolina and Tim Walberg in Michigan and Elise Stefanik in New York and Paul Mitchell in Michigan and say, hey, what are you guys thinking? Not only is healthcare not a delegated authority to the federal government under the Constitution, but we don't want you in our DNA. I think that they need to answer for that. And don't take any of these excuses about, no, it's not a mandate. Please tell me something. Tell me, why is it not a mandate? If you are giving somebody, you're mandating that they buy the healthcare. You're mandating that these are the premiums that they must pay. But then you say, if you submit to genetic testing, you can reduce that by huge amounts, right? Thousands and thousands of dollars. Come on, really? That is not a mandate? No. Penalizing people for wanting privacy in their genetic material is a mandate. That is absolutely a mandate. So we need to think about these things. And we need to contact these congressmen. And we need to hold them accountable. We need to ask them these challenging questions. We need to say to them, we will not accept this. We do not want this. We want a full repeal. We don't want Obamacare Lite. We don't want Obamacare 2.0. We want a full repeal. We don't want to replace, because there is no room for the federal government in our health. You want to free up healthcare. You want to improve healthcare. You want to drive the prices down of healthcare. This is what you do. You get the government out of your healthcare. You get back to a private free market system where the demand drives the prices. And we have competition that keeps prices where they need to be. Right now, we have the federal government picking winners and losers with subsidies to pharmaceutical companies, with bailouts. I mean, my goodness, Paul Ryan has admitted on Face the Nation that this Obamacare 2.0 is all about health insurance bailouts. This is your tax dollars. You should say how they are spent, not the federal government. Do you know, just a little side note, if the federal government was limited to spending on only the things that were constitutionally enumerated, you would shrink federal spending in the federal budget by about 90%. I mean, can you imagine the gross national product? What kind of reduction of the national debt we could get to if we just simply eliminated unconstitutional spending? We're going to shift gears a little bit, and I want to give you a little history lesson, if I can, if you'll indulge me that. A little event in history. In 1100, there was a king named William II. William II was described by the people as a wicked, evil king, tyrannical, violating the people's rights, violating their liberties, taking property from the people, taking control of the churches, taking control of the courts, replacing judges so that he could alter the enforcement of the law, the interpretations of the laws, and he could bring foreign law into the kingdom to rule and reign over the people, stealing their land and giving it to his friends so that they could all move into the kingdom and support him in his tyrannical reign, and so he could get rid of all of the native inhabitants. William II had a little brother named Henry I. And one day, William II and Henry I went hunting together. And I imagine you can guess what happened. William II was killed in a mysterious hunting accident where a stray arrow from his little brother Henry's hunting party accidentally hit William, killing him right on the scene, making Henry king. Now, the little gory details of this accident were that William was actually hit right in the eye by the arrow from Henry's hunting party. Do you think this was an accident? Do you think a coincidence? Well, I don't either. And neither did the Anglo-Saxon people. They were the people under King William II and would be now King Henry I. So now that William II is dead, Henry I is king. Now the people do not like the fact that Henry has just murdered his brother to become king. It is true they did not like William II. It is true they believed him to be a wicked, tyrannical king. But you see, they also realized that if Henry will murder his own brother to become king, then what will the value of the people's lives be to Henry? So Henry realizes that the people are not happy with him. And when you don't like your king, you don't start a recall petition and you don't find a new king to run against him in the next kingly election. When you don't like your king, you raise up a rebellion and you overthrow the king. You either run him off the throne or you chop off his head. So Henry wants to make sure that he can do some things to appease the people so he can keep his throne in his head at the same time. One of the first things Henry does is he comes to the people and he says, "Look, I understand the circumstances surrounding the death of my brother may seem a bit suspicious. So I want to do something to put your minds at ease. And when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about how Henry looks like Congress today." Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So remember now, back from the break, Henry is now king because his brother was, quote, accidentally killed in a hunting accident. Henry knows the people are not happy with him because they know that it was no accident. So Henry tries to appease the people. Henry comes to the people and he says, "Look, I realize the circumstances surrounding the death of my brother seem a bit suspicious. So here's what I want to do for you. I want to put your mind at ease. What I'm going to do is I'm going to scour the entire nation. And I'm going to find the three wisest men in all of our land. And after I locate these three wise men, I'm going to pull them together in what I call a grand tribunal. And the purpose of this grand tribunal will be to conduct an investigation to determine whether I'm at fault for the death of my brother or not." Are you catching that? Henry is going to find the people who will investigate him. He's going to approve the investigation. He's going to approve the investigators. So what do you think was the conclusion of this tribunal? Yep, you get it. Henry is innocent in the charges on the death of his brother. I mean, what else would you expect? We have a clear example here of the government investigating itself. The Anglo-Saxon people did not buy this investigation. But I wonder, would they have been more trusting of this grand tribunal if Henry would have maybe had some foresight from the future and instead of calling it a grand tribunal, called it a congressional hearing? Think about that. Isn't that exactly what a congressional hearing is? The government investigating itself? Does that sort of clear up the mystery as to why, when Congress investigates the HHS or the IRS or the EPA or any of these governmental bodies, why nothing ever happens? Because it's the government investigating itself. What kind of real investigation? What kind of sanctions? What kind of punishment are you going to get if the federal government is investigating itself? You're never going to get anything. And that's why nothing ever became of Benghazi. That's why nothing ever became of Hillary Clinton's emails. That's why nothing will ever come from the HHS investigations, the IRS investigations, the EPA investigations, or any investigations. And so now that we have the Department of Justice being called to the carpet by Congress about the wiretapping of Trump Tower, why they missed the deadline of Monday this week and asked for an extension. And Congress said, we want this information by Monday. But if you don't give us this information by Monday, we want it by March 20th. And if we don't have this information by March 20th, you're going to force us to ask for it again. Really? I mean, seriously. We had, I don't even know, can somebody out there tell me how many Benghazi hearings there were? I know there were over 8. There had to have been over 8 Benghazi hearings. And now we have Congress making demands on the Department of Justice. Can I just remind you the last time that Congress made demands on the Department of Justice was with Eric Holder, and it had to do with Fast and Furious? And Eric Holder just flat out refused to give the information that Congress was asking for. I mean, he just said, no, ain't doing it. Sorry. La, 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 la. Can't hear you. No, sorry. Not doing it. What happened to Eric Holder? Well, Congress found Eric Holder guilty of contempt, a federal offense. They found him guilty. Congress found him guilty of contempt. What happened to Eric Holder? Nothing. He was able to resign and go get a better job. No criminal action, a federal offense. He was not even impeached. There were articles of impeachment drawn on Eric Holder, but no congressman really wanted to support it, so it just simply failed in a committee. So now what do you think is going to happen to James Comey? Now that we have experience that tells us the results, we'll be right back.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So remember, before the break, we were reminded that Eric Holder was found guilty of contempt before Congress, a federal offense, and Congress did nothing. Now we have James Comey being called on the carpet by Congress for the wiretapping of Trump Tower. Tell us what's going on. Did you or did you not? Did this happen or did it not happen? Do you think the Department of Justice is going to admit that they wiretapped a presidential candidate? Do you think that they're going to try to lay that blame on Barack Obama? How do you lay that blame on Barack Obama anyway? Are we really to believe that Barack Obama got out his little electrical toolbox with his needle nose pliers and his electrical tape and went up into Trump Tower and wiretapped, planted bugs in the lightning, in the light fixtures and in the telephone headsets? Are we really to believe that Barack Obama did that? How do you even blame wiretapping on Barack Obama? That is the most ridiculous thing. I mean, that's even more ridiculous than blaming Barack Obama for $19 trillion in debt. It's even more ridiculous than blaming Barack Obama for the Bureau of Land Management and all of these executive agency actions. Because you can say that he has, you know, a direct hand in that, but you realize that it's Congress that authorizes the $19 trillion in debt, not Barack Obama. Barack Obama doesn't spend a dime unless your congressman tells him he can, gives him the money to spend it. But even more ridiculous than blaming Barack Obama for $19 trillion in debt is blaming Barack Obama for wiretapping Donald Trump. So it had to come from the Department of Justice. It had to come from there. And we already have a precedent because our judicial supremacists, our federal supremacists, they love precedent. They get a tingling that runs down their leg when they think about precedent. And we already have a precedent that says that the Department of Justice does not have to comply with a congressional hearing. They don't. Eric Holder proved that. And I just want you to think about this as we watch all of this unfold. Maybe Comey will come clean. Maybe he's a man of higher moral character than Eric Holder. I don't think that would be a very difficult level to reach. Nonetheless, maybe he is. Maybe he's a man of higher moral character than Eric Holder, and he will actually come clean. How long will it take him? Will he be fully forthcoming with all the information? Or will he only give part of the information, you know, like Hillary did with emails? And will Congress do anything about anything? Will Congress hold Comey's feet to the fire if he refuses to hand over the information that they're asking for? If they hand over the information that they're asking for, and it proves the wiretapping, what will Congress do about that? What will be the consequences? I think it would be rather hypocritical, mind you, for anyone in Congress today to be upset about wiretapping Donald Trump, considering they're listening to all our phone conversations, they're listening to all our internet activity, they're taking pictures of us as we drive down the street. No, I'm sorry, I don't mean to burst any bubbles. This is not tinfoil hat stuff. This is all documented admission from the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the NSA. It would be very hypocritical of our congressmen to be upset about the wiretapping of Donald Trump when they are funding and have given their permission to executive agencies to wiretap us. And I'm just wondering, just a little question for Donald Trump. If he is upset, truly upset, about the idea of the Department of Justice listening in on his phone conversations and listening in on his conversations in his offices, then maybe he might get a feeling about how we feel every single day. Will Donald Trump have more empathy for us now that he knows what it feels like? And will he be motivated to stop the Department of Justice, the NSA, and the FBI, his executive agencies, from denying and transgressing these fundamental rights of the people? He has now been the victim of federal overreach. Will he know how that feels and somehow offer relief for us? I would love to see President Trump look at the federal government and say, you know what? It was wrong for me. It's wrong for everybody else. And I don't care that the courts say it's okay. I don't care that your congressman has passed act after act after act condoning and encouraging this activity. It felt wrong to me. I felt violated when it happened. And I don't think anybody should have to feel that way. I would like President Trump to step up and do the right thing and say, you know what? This is not going to happen under my watch. I know that the Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects from unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. I know that that the only reasonable search and seizure, according to the language of the Fourth Amendment, is a search and seizure that is conducted with a warrant based upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation before the judge, subject to due process, which particularly describes the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. I know that's what the Fourth Amendment says, and I know what it feels like to be a victim of that intrusion, and I'm going to tell you, as President Donald Trump, this will not happen under my watch anymore. That's the kind of president that we need. Someone who will continually expose the judiciary for being way out of bounds, and your congressman for violating your rights. That's the kind of president that we need, because your congressman's not doing it. Your congressman is not stepping up and calling out the Department of Justice and the FBI. The Supreme Court is certainly not stepping up and doing anything about it. So maybe we need Donald Trump to do it. Your governor should be doing it. Your governor should be disavowing any kind of federal authority like that within the boundary of your state. Your sheriff should be as well, publicly disavowing, denying that authority. But maybe they need a gentle shove, a nudge in the right direction from somebody with a moral fortitude, with the character, with the quality of character that says, not on my watch. That's what I would like to see. So why don't we ask Donald Trump how he feels about that? Ask Donald Trump how he thinks we feel about that. I mean, think about it. Seriously, how do you feel about knowing? And you can't deny it. How do you feel about knowing that the federal government is listening to your phone conversations? They have the technology to monitor every single phone conversation that they want to. Not only that, they're not just storing up telephone numbers, which number called which number. They are literally storing up conversations. We know they're doing this. How does that make you feel? Oh, I don't care. I've got nothing to hide. Well, how do you know you don't have anything to hide? How do you know you're not saying the wrong things? I mean, many moons ago, I did several shows in a row where I listed off all of the flag words that had been, they had a whole new list. The Department of Justice and the NSA had published a whole new list of flag words, words that you say that trigger the government to listen to your phone conversations. And they were ridiculous words like Bubba. Seriously, Bubba was a flag word. And words that you would use every single day or throughout normal conversations like airplane. I mean, these simple words are now considered flag words. So how do you know you're not saying something that doesn't trigger the federal government to listen to your conversation? You can't. You cannot know. Because those were the published flag words. What are the flag words that are now secret? Liberty was a flag word. Sovereignty is a flag word. Colonial is now a flag word. As a matter of fact, some universities don't even want you to use the word colonial anymore. What's the Air Force? Yeah, I heard that the other day. The Air Force has issued a publication that says the word colonial is now no longer an accepted word. If you use the word colonial now in the Air Force, you can be accused of being prejudiced, being discriminating, and being racist if you use the word colonial. So how do you know you're not saying something that flags the government to come and listen to your telephone conversations? How do you know you're not searching something on the internet that makes them want to know what you're doing? And how do you know when it's wrong or when it's not? I'll remind you that the Southern Poverty Law Center has classified me as an anti-government extremist hate group. Me, I'm a group, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. I will also remind you that the Southern Poverty Law Center writes the training for the Department of Defense and the Department of Justice. So now we know that the Southern Poverty Law Center has identified me as an anti-government extremist hate group, and they are writing the curriculum that teaches the Department of Justice and our federal agencies. So what makes you think that they are not teaching these federal agencies that I am an enemy, that I'm a potential terrorist, because I'm an anti-government extremist hate group? You see, when the government is listening to your phone conversations, when the government is watching where you go and who you're with, when the government is tracking your keystrokes on your computer and all your internet searches, I need to ask you this question before we go to the break. Do you have freedom of speech? Do you have freedom of press? Can you peaceably assemble with whomever you choose when every move you make is being watched? My voice. Hate me if you want, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to our next segment of the Chris Ann Hall Show. And I want to now move into some issues of state sovereignty and some issues that we're seeing in political activism, some things that we need to use as tools, some things that we need to learn. And what brings this teaching moment to light are a couple of town hall meetings held by some Republican congressmen and the very topics that were being discussed. Now, in this segment, we have a Republican congressman from Texas. What's his name? Oh, Representative Joe Barton from Texas. Representative Joe Barton from Texas was speaking at a town hall meeting. And in this town hall meeting, the question came up about a vote that Joe Barton made on a piece of legislation that was allegedly going to prevent violence against women. I'm not laughing about violence against women. I'm laughing at the idea that a piece of legislation will prevent violence against women and that the federal government and their laws has ever prevented anybody from doing anything. It just doesn't exist. This mentality that we have that, oh my goodness, if the federal government writes a law, all of a sudden we're going to be fixing all our problems. People will no longer be hurting each other. People won't beat their wives. They won't abuse their daughters. There won't be any human trafficking on women. Oh, if we have national health care, people won't get sick. They won't die. You know, all disease will be cured. No mental illness, right? So this idea that somehow, boom, bam, magic, federal government makes a law and all our problems are over. But in this bill, apparently Representative Joe Barton did not vote in favor of this bill. And in this bill, Joe Barton is told that he is not doing his job because Joe Barton says, I did not vote for that bill because violence against women is not a federal issue. It is a state issue. And I want you to hear from this video. I want you to hear specifically from this video the response of the person, because this is indicative of the problem in America. Okay? This gives us a real knowledge of where our real problems lie. Our Congress is a big problem. But Congress could be controllable if this was not in the mix.
Given your voting record opposing legislation protecting women from violence, will you make a commitment to us today, make a promise that you will reach out to Congresswoman Jackie Speier and work with her to see this bill successfully through Congress.
Did you hear that? Civil rights are not a state issue, and violence against women, because it affects everyone, is a federal issue. See, this is the biggest problem, and that's what Samuel Adams said. He said, "No people will tamely surrender their liberties nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved." He said, "But on the contrary, when the people become universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink underneath their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders." The federal government is doing everything that they're doing because there are too many people asking them to do these things. There are too many people out there that believe that civil rights are not a state issue, and that because it affects women or a large group of people or something that affects the lives of every person, it is not a state issue. It is a national issue. It's this ignorance about the Constitution on delegated power and reserved power that is driving the federal machine.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Think about this. Just because it affects every person's life, that automatically, they argue, makes it a federal issue? Is there some aspect of your daily life that is unique to you? I mean, you have a family. People in America have families. You have children. People in America have children. Does that mean everything that has to do with your children is now a federal issue because it affects people all over the country? And so therefore, your children should now be under federal control? I mean, think about that question for a minute. Is there anything in your life that could not be argued affects the same other people in the country? I'm not talking about your effect on other people. I'm talking about that circumstance being unique to you alone. I think you would find that there are very, very few things that are unique to you alone. Which means this federal supremacist attitude, this idea that just because it affects a large group of people, that it falls under federal authority, is what is destroying America. I love this quote by one of my favorite founding mothers. Her name is Hannah Winthrop. And she says, quote, "How often do we see people blind to their own interests, precipitately maddening on to their own destruction?" These people are blinded by their own interest, blinded by their interest in violence against women. But everybody's got an interest in something. Everybody's in, and again, I am not diminishing the importance of combating violence against women. What I'm saying is, because you find this to be your passion, you are blinded by it. Blinded by it to the point that you are maddening on now to your own destruction. Because making everything in your life a federal issue is destructive. Absolutely destructive. And we don't even realize it. Because we don't realize the difference between state and federal authority. That's what my whole class was on C-SPAN. when we ran the class on C-SPAN for the week, or C-SPAN ran our class for the week, was all about the difference between federal and state power and why that difference is so important. Why the limitation of federal power is essential, and the control of state reserved power over the exercise of undelegated federal powers is so important. That's what my whole book, Sovereign Duty, is about. We're not going to teach on that today to any degree or detail. But if you're really interested in knowing why this man is, as Hannah would say, precipitately maddening on to his own destruction and dragging every single one of us with him, then read the book Sovereign Duty or attend one of my state sovereignty classes. I want to tell you, with the Sovereign Duty book, I wanted you to be sure that I wasn't teaching you my opinion or my interpretations to the point that I actually give you all my research. I want you to test me out. I want you to see that there is something going on here, something that's important for us to know, something for us to know to such an extent that we can actually do something about it. And what exactly we are to do. And one of the things that we have to do is we have to stop asking the federal government to do things they're not supposed to be doing. And they're not supposed to be doing anything to stop the violence against women. That is not a federal issue. The congressman was absolutely correct. This is a state issue. And here's the thing. When you invite the federal government out of its box just once, then what exactly is the limit to the federal government's power? There is no limit to the federal government's power in that case, because then they can do whatever they want to do, however they want to do it. I want to share with you a little piece of history here. This is an address given by the legislators of the state of Virginia in 1799. See, there are so many things in history that just simply repeat. Always. Those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat its mistake. If we were teaching the history of 1799 and 1800, there's no way we would be tolerating the federal government engaging in the activity that it's engaging today. We would have already learned this lesson over 200 years ago. But you see, these representatives in Virginia in 1799 give a public address, an assembly to the people. And in 1799, we have a situation where the federal government is leaping out of its side of its limited and defined, its few defined powers, trying to assume the authority that is reserved to the states. And the states were trying to push back, but they were not just simply meeting resistance from the federal government in the pushback. They were meeting resistance from their own constituents. Constituents wanting the federal government to do things they're not supposed to do. And so they give this warning. They said, look, we are your representatives. Quote, we are unwilling to shrink from our representative responsibilities. What is their greatest representative responsibility of your state and local government? What is the greatest responsibility that they have? Let me let you know a little bit of clue here. It's not economic improvement. The greatest responsibility of your state and local government is not economic improvement. It is not land management. It is not resource management. It's not education. It's not small business regulation. The greatest obligation, the greatest responsibility of your state and local government is to guard the sovereignty of the state. They have to guard those powers reserved to the states and to refuse authority of the federal government trying to exercise any power over those reserved powers. That is their greatest, that's what we've entrusted them to do. And that's what these legislators from Virginia say in 1799. Unwilling to shrink from our representative responsibilities, it would be deceitful in those entrusted with the guardianship of state sovereignty. It's deceitful of us to do the following things because you've entrusted us to guard the sovereignty of the state. Why do we have to guard the sovereignty of the state? They say,
Because we are acting under the solemn obligation of the following oath, quote, I do swear I will support the Constitution of the United States. In the Sovereign Duty Book, in my state sovereignty class, I will prove to you that if your representatives, local and state, are not guarding the sovereignty of the state, they are not keeping their promise to the Constitution. They are not fulfilling their obligation. You cannot fulfill your oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States if you are not first defending the sovereignty of the state. If state sovereignty fails, then the Constitution fails itself. I will prove that to you. Get the book. Listen to, come and attend the class. You can attend the class for free. In your area, you can book me to teach the class in your area for free. But here we have. They said, it is deceitful in those entrusted with the guardianship of the state sovereignty not to warn you of encroachments. Federal encroachments is what they're talking about. It's our job as the representatives of the state. Our entire purpose is to guard the sovereignty of the state, and it would be lying. We would be lying to you if we did not tell you the failures and the what is the word I'm looking for here? Danger. That's the word. The danger of federal encroachments. Now remember, they're battling the people actually asking the federal government to do things it's not supposed to be doing. And they recognize the allure of federal help and federal aid. They said, we know that these federal encroachments are clothed, I'm quote, clothed with the pretext of necessity. The federal government makes you think you need their help. You need federal health care. You must have federal health care. If you don't have federal health care, we're all going to die. You know what? We're all going to die. Federal health care just allows the federal government to determine who, when, where, and how we die. But you see, not only did they say, will they, quote, be clothed with the pretext of necessity, they will be disguised by the arguments of expediency, because you know you have to pass the bill so you can read the bill, right? I'm telling you the words that were written by the legislators of the state of Virginia in 1799. And here we have today, you have to pass the bill so you can read the bill. It's just the same old thing, the same old plan, the same old words, the same old tools. And because we don't teach history anymore, we're falling prey to the same old design over and over again. We are kept ignorant. Remember, Samuel Adams said, it is our ignorance that will make us fall. And the federal government in charge of the schools want us to be ignorant, especially about their devices. Now look at what they said. Though clothed with the pretext of necessity or disguised by the arguments of expedience, may yet establish precedents which may ultimately devote a generous and unsuspicious people to all the consequences of usurped power. That's the same thing that Hannah Winthrop said. How often do we see people blind to their own interests, precipitatively maddening on to their own destruction? We are here with generous and unsuspicious people. That man who wants to stop violence against women is not an evil man. He's just an ignorant man. And he's a generous man because he wants to help his neighbor. But he's unsuspicious of the consequences of federal government exercising a power they shouldn't have. All the consequences of usurped power. Because you see, there is a cascade effect. Every time the federal government assumes a power they're not entitled to exercise. It's like the camel's nose in the tent. You won't be able to stop the body from coming all the way in. Or perhaps maybe the analogy would be better to say it's like letting the lion out of the cage. You let the lion out of the cage, don't be surprised when he bites your head off. The federal government, for example, the federal government has no authority over marriage. There is nothing in the Constitution that delegates authority to the federal government over marriage. And yet they assumed that authority through the Defense of Marriage Act. Why? Not because they wanted to, because we wanted them to. What was the cascade effect of the federal government just usurping that single power?
the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your own man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So we left off after the break with the question. What was the cascade effect of the federal government assuming authority over marriage? An authority not delegated, an authority not written. Well, they not only assumed authority over marriage, but they assumed authority over bathrooms, birthday cakes, wedding cakes. What else? Photography. Through the defense, through the authority of assuming authority over marriage, they expanded that power exponentially to go into your bathrooms, into your businesses, all under the same heading of our authority over marriage. And that's why that man, although maybe generous, his failure was being unsuspicious of how government always assumes more power and more power and more power. And the very thing that he wants the government to protect, the very sword he wants the government to use to protect, will become the sword that persecutes him one day. Blind to his own needs, precipitively maddening on to his own destruction. The other thing that, and by the way, poor Congressman, what was his name again? Poor Congressman Joe Barton had no clue how to answer this question, and he handled the meeting very, very badly. But if Joe Barton had been through my constitutional training class, my state sovereignty class, he would have been able to answer this question without losing control of that meeting. He totally lost control of that meeting. He ended up shouting at the guy, telling him to shut up. And you know what? You can't win that way. But here's the problem. Joe Barton was told that it's a matter of state, but he didn't know why. And he didn't know how. That's why these state sovereignty classes that I'm teaching to the legislators is so important. If Joe Barton had read Sovereign Duty, if Joe Barton had been through one of my state sovereignty classes, he would not have lost control of that meeting, and he would have actually been in control. He would have been able to answer that question. Now, the people in the audience probably would not have accepted that answer, but like I said, he would not have lost control of that meeting. The next example that I wanted to talk to you about was another town hall meeting held by Senator Tom Cotton. Now, Senator Tom Cotton is from Arkansas, and he is holding a town hall meeting, and he's answering questions from constituents. And once again, we have an issue of the difference between state and federal power, and the people in the audience not understanding that difference. But the thing that I want to point out here, and you can find this video online if you just simply search Senator Tom Cotton faces angry constituents at town hall meeting. I want you to actually go and see this. Pull up this video online and look. This place is packed out. And the interesting thing is Senator Tom Cotton is a Republican. But this town hall meeting is packed out with Democrats, with people who are liberal and progressive in their nature, because that's the whole argument. More federal government, and it was a matter of gun control. It was just crazy. And he loses control. But the thing that I want to say is, look, when was the last time conservatives packed out a town hall meeting from a Democrat senator? When was the last time conservatives packed out a town hall meeting for a Republican? How do we expect to make any changes in government if we never say anything? Let me tell you what, it is not a badge of honor to be a member of the silent majority. Being classified as a silent majority ought to be a badge of shame. If you believe that liberty is a gift from God, if you believe that rights are inherent to the people and it's the sole purpose of the government to defend those rights, and you sit silent about that, that is a shameful thing.
And if you sit back and watch your congressman run off and assume powers that he doesn't have, and you say nothing because you're a member of the silent majority, that is not a badge of honor. That is a shameful thing. We need to pick up a lesson from the Democrat playbook and start really becoming involved in this. We need to pack out these meetings. Can you imagine if Senator Tom Cotton had people in his audience who actually understood state sovereignty, who could have encouraged him rather than packing out a house of people who were ignorant? Nothing's going to change until we get involved. And the other side is doing it right. So I want to ask, why are we staying silent? This is a fight, people. This is a fight. And it's not going to be won unless we actually get in it. God bless. See you tomorrow.